This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 201, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. You can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 180 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Eve Lorgan about her book, The Love Bite: Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships. Eve's two books, The Love Bite and The Dark Side of Cupid, reveal compelling case histories of alien abductees and experiences of anomalous relationship setups and interdimensional interferences. Eve began her pioneering work with alien abductees, my labs, and mind control victims while earning her master's degree in counseling psychology in 1992. Hey Eve, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, it's nice to be here.
I wanted to talk to you about your book called The Love Bite: Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships. Before all that, could you give us an example of what this love bite phenomenon is?
Well, I know it sounds hokey the way we named it, but it actually, the name of that phenomena actually came about by, I think, a group in the San Francisco Bay Area who were all experiencers of alien abduction types of experiencers. And then many who noticed that the aliens, or they thought the aliens, were after encounters, they ended up having like a love obsession with another targeted partner who could also be an abductee or not, that the aliens would set up and orchestrate and influence in however they do that. And so it became known, like in the old circles, as like the alien love bite. And then I just called it the love bite for short. But how I actually found out more about this, because it actually happened to me and also my support group members way back. I mean, I'm talking about the late 90s after Dr. Carla Turner passed away. And I was a strong, I really liked her work. And we contacted Barbara Bartholik, who was the hypnotherapist who worked with pretty much all of Dr. Carla Turner's work in her book, as well as her own. Like, Carla Turner had a lot of her own experiences, as well as her family. And so Barbara Bartholik really was a key figure behind how she discovered so much within her own way of investigating like hypnotherapy and her own research and therapeutic process and her own intuition of what was going on deep behind the scenes within people's experiences with the aliens or the ETs. And one of them was what she called the alien engineered love obsession. And it was very unique. And Barbara Bartholik seemed to believe that the primary ones behind really instigating the more painful aspects of this kind of love obsession was the reptilians, although many reports that she got, as well as me for years, it wasn't just, quote, reptilians or even identified. It could have been alien grays or mantids or any number of beings, or maybe it wasn't really clear what kind of beings they were. Maybe they were some kind of spirit guide, you know? So long story short, there was a relational dynamic pattern that seemed to signify that this was like an alien engineered love obsession based on how it would play out in the experiencer's life who was basically reporting, or the one who had the obsession. So sometimes both parties had an initial obsession that was very powerful, and it's different from regular, you know, love relationships, because of the strong empathic, telepathic, and pronounced love soul kind of connection feeling, and also the dynamic that would happen during the drama of the love obsession. There was an increased alien visitation, influence, abductions happening during the drama of it, which indicates, you know, their interest and their interest in perpetuating or influencing or orchestrating or manipulating in some way. So that became pretty clear that, the love obsession may start out. Sometimes you, let's say, have a dream or a vision of the person, and it could be influenced by actually meeting them on an alien craft or some, quote, abduction-like experience. And then you may get the image of them in your head, and you remember them, and then you might meet them later in person or online. And then you have like a deja vu of having known them before. You may have joint memories of something like that. And the love is very powerful and strong. And you could have like mutually shared dreams and complete telepathy and amplification of your kundalini and psychic abilities. So it creates a very phenomenal feeling of having met like your soulmate or your twin flame in the initial beginning phases. But what would happen often is that someone would be in the, what I call it, you know, the yearning and the obsessive throes of being in love with someone. And then that other partner would be, maybe they would be interested in the beginning, and then they would be like switched off suddenly as if they were just psychically unplugged after, usually after an abduction or some kind of event that showed in some way, based on many case histories, that there was an interference factor that basically switched off the other person, or the aliens manipulated it in such a way that the dynamic of unrequited love and yearning and painful, grievous, like high emotional output, basically, was the, it seems like that's what they were doing. Like, are they trying to milk us for our emotional energy and then switch someone off psychically so that they no longer had an interest in them? And it often would happen like after an abduction kind of thing. But not always. Sometimes the dynamic, and this actually gets into much more than the Love Bite book. If I just regress a little bit here, it started out as an investigation into people who already experience alien encounters, abductions throughout their life and their family history. So let's say multiple visitations or abductions throughout their life and their childhood and in their family systems. And then those people who would have the relationship set up, they would have like a love bite, love connection with someone that the aliens would set them up, or they would break off certain relationships that they didn't want them to have or have children with even. So that was how it started, with the case histories of people who are already, quote, experiencers and abductees. But as I proceeded in doing more therapy and reports, not everybody remembered, let's say, a classic alien abductee type of pattern, but they may encounter different kinds of beings that are interfering in their life in different ways or with their partner. So sometimes they would perceive them as certain kinds of spirit guides that someone was channeling, or, you know, a dark figure, or a, you know, hooded rogue being with glowing red eyes that floated through the bedroom, or any number of types of beings that sometimes people would think they're different kinds of aliens, and sometimes they would think they're just another type of interdimensional being, but they would still be involved in a type of love obsession and what I call emotional, energetic harvesting of their energy, because it would create a lot of chaos and drama in the relationships that were influenced, set up, or broken up. So that was really the identifier, and certainly it was pretty consistent pattern of observation. Although some people claim that if they were set up, the relationships lasted. But over time, you know, I've been doing this 30 years now. I've noticed that most of those that were set up, or they believed to be their twin flame or their soulmate, didn't turn out over the long haul, because a lot of times there was unhealthy relationship dynamics within the relationship through one or both partners. And so that's why I actually kind of shifted my research, if you will, more to therapeutic strategies of healing narcissistic abuse or interference with demonic or malevolent spiritual or alien interference in our lives, so that our relationships and our lives don't have to have so much chaos and, you know, health issues or, you know, unhealthy dynamics within the relationships and the family systems. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, what we really want is, you know, peace and happiness and love and healthy connection and healthy relationships. So that's why I've actually, now I focus more on, well, what is the health of your relationship? And how is that playing out? Let's say if the aliens are wanting you to marry somebody or set you up with somebody, what are the relational dynamics going on? And are they healthy? And that's a good question to ask.
Is there a thing where there are different groups of ETs doing this? And for some people, these love bites are very positive, and for others, it's very negative. or are they all pretty much not so good?
Well, I like to observe over time, and I think that's a useful thing, certainly. It's difficult. Okay, so the first question, and this is something that Barbara Bartholik, who was really the grandmother behind the recognition that this is a phenomenon that repeats itself and it is identifiable and has dynamics of a type of emotional harvesting where there's an initial love obsession, increased sex drive, emotional energy, sexual energy, even psychic abilities and kundalini activation can happen. And she believed that it was primarily reptilian in nature simply because they had the ability oftentimes to shape shift their perception or manipulate our perception of them within our experiences, which was demonstrated clearly in Dr. Carla's book about the Ted Rice case called The Masquerade of Angels, which was, I guess, back in the early and late 90s, I think that was published. And so that's a classic, you know, poster child of, you know, a full investigation into an abductee's life where, you know, he was actually a healer and a spiritualist and a medium, and he had all these abilities, which many abductees do, by the way. And then he found out that these spirit guides that were working with him are actually trying to cover up the trauma of the abductions to keep him from investigating that aspect of his life and to encourage him to go on basically the PR campaign for the New Age agenda of healing and this and that, it was really like reptilians behind his experiences and the quote, love bite in his story. I put into the Love Bite book and I created one of the major cases in the book, but just quote, the love obsession angle of how they carry this out in his life, described by the late Dr. Carla Turner and also with Barbara Bartholik's mentorship during the writing of my book. So primarily we will say reptilians, but alien grays were also involved, many different types, and certainly mantids have been described, and even Nordics, and certain robed hooded entities or higher level ones pretending to be beings of light where they're really not that. A type of being that Dr. Corrado Malanga, who's an Italian investigator and scientist, called it the Ouros Ra being, which tended to be this type of being that was discovered under hypnotic regressions with the soul component of abductees. And it was like a bird-like being that had big eyes, you know, a crook nose, these funny little appendages on the shoulders, and he called it the Ouros Ra type of bird being, but they were very tall and very large, and they tended to be higher on the hierarchy above many of the other alien beings that were described, because many of them can shapeshift. So they could shapeshift in the astral, quote, interdimensional form, or they can also have a physical form. So, and even behind the astral appearance in our perception, let's say within a dream experience or the astral realm, could be masked and manipulated and really be something else. So this is where like a deep investigation of not just hypnotherapy, but therapy in general to, you know, deal with the trauma and really getting to the truth of one's experiences to reveal a deeper quality of essence of who these beings are outside of their image they're projecting, because it could be many different images. But I will say, just to make it simple, you know, reptilians, grays, mantids, Nordics, even any of the ones really observed within the abduction phenomena, or even those who people channel, who they claim to be ascended masters even. So I'm going to include them in the, you know, in the group, because in my second book, The Dark Side of Cupid, it became more clear that this wasn't limited to, quote, the alien abductee population, but included other people and beings that also interacted with them, but certainly within a manipulation of a relationship fashion, but also sometimes physical manifestations, including energy vampirism and even anemia from the energy vampirism. So still some medical effects as well.
So could you define what energy vampirism is?
Well, that, you'll know when you feel it. Sometimes you just feel it if you're around like someone who's like high drama, you know, the classic high drama and chaos, or a personality disorder that has been described in the DSM, which is, you know, the mental health psychology academic, whatever, like a personality disorder would be a access to classification of a mental disorder. And basically, it's just a personality construct in early life that's created in a certain way due to whatever traumas. So like, for example, borderline personality disorder is classic for energy vampirism, high chaos and high emotional volatility and reactivity and triggering and bad behaviors that are like, you know, relationally, they're like a nightmare. And even from a therapeutic perspective, they're very difficult clients to work with. And the other one that is more pronounced and become much more popular now is called what, narcissistic personality disorder, which will have usually, let's say, an overt or grandiose form, which is more obvious, or the more covert, vulnerable, less obvious type, but certainly almost more dangerous within a relational capacity for their damage on their partners. So these kinds of personality disorders can create the energy vampirism and, let's say, emotional vampirism and psychic vampirism effect you feel when you have a relationship with them, or even a long-term interaction, or even go on a trip with them or spend time with them. Their emotional neediness or their creation of chaos and the way they trigger and project will have the net result, you know, after you're like, you're in their presence long enough, you're like, you're feeling really drained, you know? So that, I believe, is classic, where you feel it more than you can like prove it. But in other cases, let's say, and this is described actually more so in my second book called The Dark Side of Cupid, where the, let's say, one partner that someone was like kind of set up with or manipulated with or drawn into was almost like a classic vampire, where they were hosted or overshadowed by a non-human intelligent entity that was very seductive and powerful and hypnotic and could cause their sexual and kundalini emotional energy to just be overtaken. Like you just fall obsessively in love and you can't stop it. It's just like, they have this magnetic power and control of you, like a love spell. And those kinds were actually the more dangerous in terms of what someone noticed in energy vampirism. And that's actually described very more clearly in my second book, where it is a definite observation, where if you take a step back and you're like, wait a minute, how am I experiencing this? What's the net effect in my life and in my health? And is this good for me? Then you could tell, like, you know, you're drained, or you might develop a health problem, like while in a relationship with a narcissist, or actually get anemic, or, you know, your energy field will collapse. You won't be able to, you'll get sick all the time. You'll get depressed. You'll know.
Is there a thing with this where the ETs, these beings, will bring two people together because they want them to have children? And for some reason, those children is what they would want for their DNA or something. And perhaps the women would have missing pregnancies.
Well, yeah, that actually happens. Although what I find even counterintuitive, because I would have thought, oh yeah, they're putting these people together because they want, you know, the genetic combination of their children, and then they could abduct the children and they could refine this genetic profile. But in reality, with quote, the love bite, they don't necessarily put these people together to have children or to create pregnancies. But some pregnancies had been created through those connections, let's say on the craft, where they later had a pregnancy and then had it taken. And this was described in one of Barbara Bartholik's cases that I put in my Dark Side of Cupid. So sometimes that happens, where they want to set you up or to get you pregnant. But sometimes they will, for example, you'll be married to someone and then you get pregnant, and then they take the embryo of the current person you're pregnant from, like your partner, and then they'll just harvest it and they'll just take it. They want you to get pregnant and then they'll just take it. But then they'll set you up in a love bite, let's say when you're in a marriage with your regular partner, and then they'll set you up with somebody else who could be another abductee or another person to have a love obsession with, to just harvest off of that, or possibly create some kind of, I mean, they could take you, we know now, they could take you, they could, you know, cause you to have sexual relations or in vitro fertilizations with someone else's, you know, genetic material, and then they can grow it up inside you and they could take it and they could do all this within their own environment outside of your regular life and regular relationships. So it doesn't have to be the person you're married to that they wanted you to have children with. But the question remains, like, do you remember that? Like, some people, maybe they remember that's maybe what the aliens wanted for them. But in almost most of the cases I investigated who believe they were having definitely, quote, an alien love bite or children with, so, or got pregnant with. But sometimes they did. So I always felt, well, that's counterintuitive. But really, it brings back the quote hypothesis that Barbara Bartholek and Dr. Carla Turner came out with years ago about, you know, this is an emotional harvesting game, but much, much more, depending on really, like, well, who's interacting with you? And how is your life as a result of this? And what is the relational health dynamics of you in your relationships and family system? And are these beings influencing that to be, let's say, unhealthy? And that, I think we need to ask that question.
Well, could you describe one of the case studies in your book as to, like, show how this all works?
Let's see. Well, there's many in my first book, of course, The Love Bite. And I really liked the ones where there was a military element, simply because a lot of those happened in my own life and many people in my group. Well, I mean, in the Ted Rice case, that's definitely classic and was well investigated, really, by Dr. Carla Turner and many in my book. There's several in here, like Charles and Sarah was a, you know, a case. You just have to get the book. Angelina and Steve, Sophia and Dave, Janice and Alex, Mia Adams and the FBI agent. That was a good one, because that involved a military FBI element, as well as classic alien abduction and classic assumption of some people being hybrids, that the that our own, quote, military and government were watching and following, who assumed that some people here who are already abductees are, quote, hybrids or part alien, and that they carry that belief system. And then they go and investigate and spy on them, or actually harass them or try to cause them problems. So that was actually a really good case in The Love Bite. And Mia Adams actually had written her own book years ago called The Exiles. And I basically interviewed her over a period of time with questions on her specific relationship with the man in question, which actually he was what I would call as a biochemist, because I thought this was interesting, because I was a biochemist right before I even became a therapist, by the way. So I always had an interest in, well, you know, what's this genetic thing going on and how they might be, you know, tweaking our genetics or augmenting us or creating real hybrids, and how might they do that? But in Mia Adams' case, this one's so fantastic. I mean, this, my geekiness comes out in being so interested in all the things that happened were very significant. She was a classic alien abductee, no doubt, by, I believe, mostly alien grays. And she held a very spiritual kind of New Age perspective in her early life until she had this love bite thing happen. But the man that was the one who was her paramour, so to speak, was much younger, probably, I don't know, maybe 18 years younger or 17 years younger than herself. And he was actually an FBI agent who was sent to investigate and neutralize her in her alien abduction research at the time, because she was getting very involved with, you know, like finding out what's going on with these experiencers and what are the aliens doing and just getting information out, right? So he was actually sent to, quote, neutralize her by his handlers, you know? So they believed that, you know, maybe there was too much information coming out in her small circle of, you know, research or whatever, and that they needed to kind of put a neutralization tactics on it. And it wasn't to kill her, but, you know, what does neutralization mean? To interfere in her life in some way as to misdirect or stop the, you know, the output of information or the kind of information. So anyway, it turned out that he was actually being mind controlled, and he was also an alien abductee as a result of a in vitro fertilization, probably genetically modified person himself. And so when he realized all this through his own hypnotic regressions and what some of his handlers and people were saying, and they actually intervened on his behalf because they knew that the, this is so complicated, the aliens were trying to do a love obsession between, quote, this, we call him named Jordan, codenamed Jordan, the FBI agent, who was 17 years younger than the woman. He was actually a closet abductee who didn't realize that he was actually manipulated to actually be involved in the FBI. Okay. So it was really mind control and influence through his own abductions and the people handling him and his higher ups, you know, to investigate. But then he realized through the love obsession he had with her, and she also had strong feelings, but it wasn't as strong as his. So as they investigated more fully with a lot of this woo-woo smoke and mirrors, you know, manipulation and, you know, phone tapping and the whole nine yards, like a whole X-File case. What they found out in the end was that Mia was abducted actually by human military at age 17, taken over actually in a transport plane because she remembered this in an abduction, like during regression, several regressions. That and then she was taken where they did some kind of in vitro. They removed one of her eggs. Okay, simple procedure, by even by humans, and then taking that egg and then removing her own autosomal DNA and then inserting two DNA components of two other, quote, humans, a male and a female, who would be the real autosomal parents. But Mia was the one who had the ovary, which basically incubated the embryo, right? So she's the mitochondrial mother, the ovary mother of the one who was the child was Jordan, the FBI agent, who was 17 years her younger than her. So anyway, they set him up and they wanted to do this study of supposedly the aliens. One of the reasons to do this, you know, love obsession, love bite connection, was to observe the non-tangible energy fields and the strength of those non-tangible energetic connections between people, between whoever they set up. So maybe observing the strength of the love obsession or the non-tangible energy fields connecting people, like a strong love, a strong, well, mother-son bond. Okay, many mothers and sons or children and their mothers have very strong connections, like telepathy, okay, and complete emotional empathy. And I know as a mother, I have that with my own son, right? So I guess part of the study must have been if you remove the autosomal, the regular DNA, which we call nuclear DNA, which is the type that we, in the pairs of DNA that most people know, they look like big X's, you know? Anyway, when you remove that and you only have the DNA that exists in the original mother, which is the ovum, that contains what they call the mitochondrial DNA of the original mother. Okay, so the bonds that exist that can create strong bonds between people, I would say that the mitochondrial bond can create and exacerbate that connection. So that might have been part of the study of the aliens, which was, you know, kind of like, well, you didn't want to put a mother and son together because that's like an ancestral like thing. And so actually in the case, this is, you got to read the book. The FBI agents who were the handlers of Jordan, they found out that the aliens were doing this and they actually wanted to protect him because they was like, they had to draw a line in the sand that this was like unethical, like putting a mother and son together. And he realized that, you know, she was his original like mother of the ovum, but his other parents were just the genetic donors who were in vitro fertilizing, you know, this egg that was, you know, taken from Mia Adams. So he figured all of that out and he went through this whole trauma himself and wrote like these secret coded letters to Mia, which were reprinted in a Love Bite book, by the way. And so in his reprinted letter, which is kind of coded, right? There was like some secret coded words in there, which I reprinted. And I don't know if Mia ever kind of figured it out totally because in the end of the story, it was kind of sad. Supposedly, you know, after he figured out all this stuff, Jordan, who was in the FBI, Division 5, right? Which we can go into the book about that spookiness. But he supposedly committed suicide. And he was a father of three and already married. So supposedly he committed suicide and he died. And whether or not that's really true, or if it was coded that he basically faked his death and he just got out of the whole thing, you know, some people do that when they work for these agencies, they just basically fake their death and, you know, change the name and they go live in another part of the world and they just do something else. So whether or not that really happened, we don't know for sure. But the letter is rewritten in the Love Bite. But what he learned from his FBI people and people from the Department of Navy, which he called the DON, Department of Navy, was very involved with investigating and studying and keeping a watch on the extraterrestrial connection with humans, especially abductees and their families, and following them. And so they were very involved in actually a lot of government activities, observing all these abductees and their family lines and stuff. So they knew about all this. So he was basically talking about how they knew about all this and that there was a threat to humanity based on the reptilian connection and how they were trying to manipulate our genetics, which would be detrimental to humanity. And a lot of what they were doing was, quote, these love obsessions and connecting people together and tweaking their DNA and probably doing a lot more, which we discovered later in our own observations, which gets into some of James Bartley's work. Which he worked with me a lot in our early investigation days, and he does his own work now. Actually, he lives in Australia. So anyway, some of his work, and I mentioned him in the Love Bite. And so anyway, long story short, the government knew that there were some harmful species involved with abductions, that actually sometimes they took people, they didn't bring them back. You know, sometimes they were involved in a lot worse things. And then there were those, the alien grays, which they knew were hybridizing with humans to become the ruling elite over time. And this was something that they wanted to actually mitigate against. And that might have been what Jordan was saying, based on what the Department of Navy knew. They were trying to mitigate against this takeover of human society by these human-alien hybrids, or the ones that were being influenced by the more malevolent and dominant races that were abducting people. So there's a lot of complexity involved, actually, in the alien abduction and experiencer. I don't even like to call it a phenomenon, because it's real. It's not just a phenomenon. It's a real thing. And it does follow bloodlines and genetics. And there are a number of beings involved, or maybe with a number of different agendas. But I believe this case, the Mia and FBI agent Jordan case and the Love by it, demonstrated a lot of different factors that we see within our own. Let's say, you know, you just want to do a support group and it's for, you know, people having ET encounters. But what you find is many different kinds of experiences. Sometimes they think they're just benevolent contactee kinds of things where they're involved with channeling and they're not getting abducted. They don't think they are. Or they might have a hidden abduction history and they're just channeling and they think that they're benevolent beings. But behind the scenes, they're really like what Ted Rice found out, where they're like the reptilians. So, and there may be different beings doing different things for different agendas. But overall, and this is why I try to simplify this now, like instead of looking at it from all these different races and all these different agendas, what's the overall net effect of what is the relational help of you and your primary partner in your marriage and in your family and your family systems, and the influence that these beings are having on that family system, you know, and are they trying to hide what they're doing? Are they trying to create Stockholm syndrome to make them your saviors? Are they making you create cults? Is there narcissistic abuse a big thing in your family system? And do you recognize it when it's present? So these are the questions I ask. So I reduce it to a more simple thing. And in my Dark Side of Cupid, I really kind of summed it up in my second edition, by the way. And as a side note, the Love Bite, I'm working on a second edition now. I'm actually done with it. We just have to get it printed out and go through the process where there's many more cases and more final words in terms of, you know, overall over 30 years, you know, this is pretty much what I think it is. And so I refine what I've discovered, and I don't make it so much about the aliens, because it is about humanity It is about our spiritual integrity and our relational health, and is about love and how we can be the best beings we can be. And what's influencing us to become the best we can be with relational help and health, and what might be influencing us to be unhealthy, to normalize non-love and dysfunctional relationships and the normalization of narcissistic abuse. And if that's happening, something's wrong. And so this is where the whole Stockholm syndrome thing, we need to really look at that closely, not only in quote cult systems, but what's going on in the world, like with the recent 2020 thing, which caused us to believe certain narratives. And this is like, when we compare this to, let's say, a cult leader who's like a bad guy, who's like a narcissist or a psychopath, or he's hosted by like a malevolent being masquerading as a being of light or as a prophet or whatever, then we can see the dynamics of narcissistic abuse, which has a pattern. And they basically erase your identity and your beliefs about reality. So they take over your identity. So they want to create you to be like them and be their puppet and to ally with their belief system that they're benevolent, and then will create this Stockholm syndrome of erasure of your identity, your history, your real identity. So this actually becomes, what is our true human identity issue? And it comes from our eternal spirit, which is pure, and it should be pure and uncorruptible. So that's what I believe now. And we can get resolution to these questions by understanding our true identity in the eternal spirit. This is not the same as what I think the Westerners call our soul. It is really, in the Western mindset, we call mind, spirit, soul is often used. But in this context, soul would be the identity we take on in this current incarnational avatar body, whatever you want to call it, which would be our personality, our experiences in this life, the family system we come from, our ancestry. But that's just a limited identity. That's actually only a fragment of our real identity and our eternal spirit, which can have many different experiences in many different realms. And so this is where, in my belief system now, I have come to agree with my identity in Christ through the truths of Christ Jesus, or Yeshua, HaMashiach. And when we understand through that mystery, which comes through the Holy Spirit indwelling us, by the adoption of the lifestyle of the gospel of peace that Jesus really exemplified in his words and actions. When we identify with that, the mind of Christ, then we come to our true identity and our true power, and then we can discern between truth and falsehood, or partial identity and real identity. Because really, when we're being, quote, dominated or narcissistically abused, or we're becoming occupied by an enemy force that is much smarter than we are, let's say smarter than humanity, you'll say a smart artificial intelligence or an evil alien or whatever, they will attack you through your identity, through a type of narcissistic abuse that is very deceptive and predatory. So we have to understand how that operates so that we can reconnect with true identity, because truth, when it is realized deeply in our fullest lucidity of being, cannot be shaken from their lies and their deceptions and their control and their domination and all the things that they do to try to erase our identity and make us passive and compliant. And pretty soon we're, thinking we're them. We ain't them. Okay. We're our original identity. So they play this game with making us identify with them. Oh, I'm an ET hybrid. I'm a this, I'm a that. No, you're not. You know, this is what this is a type of abuse. Our original identity is not in any alien species, okay? It's not even in our human body. It's in our eternal spirit that came before this incarnation even. And exists now and even afterwards. So that's where I say, we need to go back into our original identity of who is real humanity in our true eternal spirit. And then that's what gives us the foundation of truth that anchors us to be able to move through this game of dominance and deception and manipulation that these beings are doing through abduction, because in reality that we don't need to be abducted. And like real, let's say, angelic beings or the benevolent ones, they don't need to be abducting people and running around in spaceships, you know. And I've heard that from many a spiritual, you know, realized person. You know, they don't need that. They interact with these higher level, I don't know, spiritual beings, God, Jesus, our own personal relationship with Christ. It don't need no spaceship. It don't need no abduction. It doesn't need none of that. We don't need no upgrades, you know, with freaking implants and whatever medical applications that they deem us to have to get.
Well, could we talk about your experiences? Because I think you mentioned in another podcast you had an experience when you were 11 years old.
Well, there was more than one, believe me. And you know what? I think many of us realize as we come together and start sharing with one another, usually we're like, sometimes we're teenagers when we realize this and we can actually meet others. Like nowadays, I think younger people or even children can start talking about like what they're experiencing, especially if they have good parents where they could just talk the truth. But in my generation, of course, I wasn't really able to talk about this until I was well into my 30s, okay? Like, really. I mean, I knew these were happening, but I didn't know really the fullness of what was happening. Like, I remembered one, like a classic abduction kind of memory when I was basically 11, I think. But in reality, later, I realized this happened like many, many times and even much younger. And all throughout my life, it happened in many ways. But oftentimes we think, oh, we only have an event and it only started when you're like four or whatever. But in reality, we've had these probably from a much earlier age. So the event that really struck in my memory as the most profound classic alien abduction memory was something that Bud Hopkins actually described in some of his early books. And that's why I really started investigating it. It was from really reading more of Bud Hopkins' work in the beginning. And so it was basically just being called like telepathically, like wake up in the middle of the night, like being called to meet these beings that you already know somehow, like, and that you need to go outside. So the dream, it was remembered as a lucid dream, okay? So I get up out of bed, walk out the front door with my pajamas on, barefoot, walk down the street knowing that these beings are going to meet me at a certain place. So I had to walk outside of my house, down the street, down another street where there was like a street light and then a mailbox, and it was like on a corner. It was the place where, you know, the bus would come and pick us up sometimes. So that was where the beings in this craft told me to go. And so I, you know, it's like you do it on command unconsciously where you get these, okay, you know you're supposed to meet them and that you already know them. And then that was the feeling. You already know these beings, but it's like there's two parts of you. This is where the conflict came in. My realization, I thought they were good beings that, oh yeah, these are the beings I know and that they're good. And they want to meet me and go down and meet me down like on the corner, right? But then as I'm walking down the street in my lucid dream memory, barefoot in my pajamas in the middle of the night, I'm crying and I'm mad at the same time because there's another part of me that knows that they're lying and they're really not good, okay? So there's one part of me that was kind of trained or to believe that they're good and that they just want to meet me, okay, down on the corner. So when I meet them down on the corner, I'm waiting there and there's a craft, right? And I don't even know if it was a color of, it was basically a circular craft, like a classic saucer. That was, you know, much higher than, let's say, a telephone pole, maybe, you know, twice the height of the telephone pole or maybe three times the height. I don't know. But it beamed down a white light on top of me as I was standing there on the ground. And then it basically lifted me up, you know, into the craft. And so when that happened, like just being pulled up into the craft, then that was basically blackout. No more memory after that. And then just waking up knowing something happened, but not knowing the fullness of what happened, but being angry. And I remember the part, because I did many regressions on this, trying to get to the root of this, which was really interesting, because not everybody can get to the root of their abduction memories. And that's frustrating, I think, for a lot of us, that, you know, we live with the reality knowing that we've had these experiences, but we may only remember a fraction of them. And even that is very little compared to maybe how many times they've interacted with us. So someone, if I carry this forward, well, I actually figured out later, and this is really weird, but this involves why I believe there's a military element involved with many abductees' lives, and I don't think they're, quote, faking it. Like many people out there saying, oh, well, now, you know, the people who think they're abducted, it's really the military who are faking it, and it's all these, like, bad military people. There's actually both going on. So, and there's, I think, humans who are involved with various government, military, spooky groups, whatever, who are investigated and following people who are already, quote, real abductees with real aliens. Okay. So this is where I go back into, no, there really are aliens and there really are military. And there's a whole lot of things going on here. And there are humans who want to know what's going on. Okay, so in my experience later, when I was investigating this, when I was in the midst of a love bite, mind you, with another person who was many years older than myself, involved with an alphabet soup agency, I'll just leave it at that. And so I did have an experience which was like another, quote, lucid dream abduction, where I was taken by this person and another group who were humans, and some of them were humans like in lab coats, like the lab coat people. We made a joke about that in our abductee support groups, like, oh yeah, you met the lab coat people when they were humans, you know, doing these medical things. Anyway, so the memory was this happened in a lucid dream. So I didn't do this in a regression. I had a lucid dream showing me this because I did so much prayer and, like, I would do post-hypnotic suggestions before I would go to sleep. I would practice lucid dreaming. I was really into this, you know, because I wanted to know the truth. So I had an experience that was like a lucid dream of meeting the alphabet soup agency, quote, love bite partner that I had a love obsession with, right? And this was probably, I don't know if it was after I was done having love obsession, because this was a whole process that took several years to really get through in my life, which is the reason why I wrote my book, because I learned more about this, right? Okay. So anyway, it was an experience where that person was present and wanting to do a hypnotic regression on me about my alien abductions. So I go into this room and sit in a chair, and he's doing this classic, you know, putting me in a trance and going down, you know, in time, where they take you back to the 11-year-old abduction, which was the one I always remembered, except blacking out when the craft pulled me up in the light. So anyway, this person in this lucid dream, and I'm saying that with, like, you know, quote marks, alleged lucid dream. Then he's trying to do a regression on me to get to the 11-year-old self that remembers the abduction. Okay, so then he goes down in this hypnotic regression in the dream where he's accessing the 11-year-old experiencer who remembers. And the adult self, that I'm observing this as my adult self sitting in the chair, and then it's like he commands the adult self, which is me, my conscious outer personality as an adult, to leave the room so that he could talk to the 11-year-old who has the memory and try to prevent me from remembering and knowing the truth of what that other part of me knows. So this is classic dissociation, by the way. This happens often in people with trauma or who grew up with trauma, or especially alien abductions. We have dissociation from traumatic memories that I think even, quote, the aliens are actually doing on purpose, because they don't want us to remember the whole thing, right? So anyway, in this particular experience, he takes me down to the 11-year-old, and then he commands me as the adult self to leave the room. So it was like I walked out of my body, like having two selves. So there's my other self sitting in the chair, who's the 11-year-old, and I had to walk out of the room and be commanded to leave so he could get the truth out of the 11-year-old of the real abduction memory. And so as I left the room, I'm like, wait a minute, you know, this is really weird. And I got lucid in the dream. Supposedly, I was locked out. Excuse me, this is part of the manipulation. I have to cough for a minute. Hold on.
No problem.
Classic, you know, when I'm telling you something, because this is important. And this is why there's many more people involved in this phenomena than just the aliens and just the experiencers. So in this lucid dream, okay, I walk out of the room. I'm commanded with my adult self to walk out of the room while the truth is being accessed by this alphabet soup agency friend, hypnotherapist who's, you know, in my dream that I really met in real life, who did a regression on me, who's like acting under the command to get the memory, but leaving me out of it, like my adult self from conscious recall. And so I walk into this other room in the dream after I was commanded to leave, and knowing that he was accessing this younger part of me that has the real memory. And then I go into this other room, and there's a bunch of like lab coated kind of people there, like other adults, maybe five, not that many. And I could feel them trying to manipulate my consciousness in the dream. And I got lucid. So they were trying to make it like I was sinking into the floor and like getting more and more like dizzy and blacking out. And then they were implying in my consciousness, giving this post-hypnotic suggestion, saying, you have cancer, you have cancer. And then showing me this yellow ball of light and putting it into my right breast. And then I said, no, I'm not. I am the full identity in Christ, or whatever. I was praying to Jesus saying, no, I'm not. I do not accept that. I'm full of life. And I was basically discounting everything they were doing to discount the suggestion they were putting in my mind, thinking I was non-lucid. And so I woke up out of it just reasserting that I am healthy. I'm full of life. I do not have cancer, blah, 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 blah. And then knowing that this was a strange manipulation that was beyond the aliens. This was someone else trying to access the truth inside of me without my regular, quote, personality self knowing, or them trying to access or do something to that 11-year-old who knew the truth of what happened and not allowing me to access it. And some human group associated with an alphabet soup agency and a love bite setup that was already set up. So this made me open up a big can of worms that had to do with my labs, right? Military abductions and their connections with aliens and abductees and, you know, humans and secret groups. So that opened up a whole can of worms in terms of the necessity of doing not only, you know, trauma therapy, learning about dissociation, the spiritual connection we have that can, you know, remove demons and entities and curses, and actually lucid dreaming and lucid living, and how can we become more lucid to remove when someone's doing a subliminal programming or post-hypnotic suggestions in your consciousness. When you're not lucid, your subconscious mind can hold on to that and accept it passively. And so even like a disease or a belief system or a screen memory, for example, and we know that is actually common, that they do screen memories and can manipulate perception also. So this is where like, wow, you know, what's the most important thing that we can do and be to get to the truth and to really get lucid against all levels of this game? Because this is a big, phenomena thing that's going on with humanity probably for a long time. And it seems to be culminating in our age today, at least based on what was shared, you know, by that FBI agent named Jordan in the Love Bite book. There was a letter that he wrote, which was based on research he learned with basically black op groups that knew more about the aliens and the abductees themselves, which indicated that they believe that some abductees are, quote, they're really hybrids, or they're augmented, or they're part alien. And this belief also shown through the case, it's also in the Love Bite, summarized, was the Linda Cortile case that Bud Hopkins investigated and wrote an entire book about called Witnessed. And they even put that on Netflix, and they did her a great disservice. They did Bud Hopkins a disservice, making it look really hokey and stupid. But the Linda Cortile case is a very good example that I re-put in the Love Bite case, just focusing on the relational how they set them up. but also how the government knew about the aliens' involvement and their interference in abductees' lives, to the point of, like, actually Linda was abducted by some FBI agents, by the way. Like, the FBI is always getting involved here, which makes you wonder about the whole X-Files series, you know, what really spawned a lot of the shows and this. Never mind. So in the Linda Cartil case, one of the things that I noticed, which was interesting, and when the FBI agents basically abducted her, like physically, when she dropped her kid off to school, you know, in New York, and took her in like a regular human car or whatever, a FBI mobile or whatever car it was, and then they took her to another location. And I remember when she was in the car, they made her take off her shoes, and one of them was like looking at her feet and looking at her heel. And I think that they had this, maybe they had some heads up that maybe certain alien human hybrids have something weird going on with their feet or their toes or their heels or something. But it was never fully discussed or understood, like, what were they really looking for, you know? But later in my investigations with some people, people who had described bad love bites, basically, with reptilian human hosts or reptilian hybrids, their feet were different. Their toes were different. So I don't know what they were really looking for, but I actually found that out later, that there were different things in human physiology and sometimes blood types or medical reactions to drugs that would indicate that maybe somebody is an abductee, or they might be modified, or maybe they're not modified at all. Maybe they're looking for certain strains of ancient DNA that they find of use for their own purposes. So that's where it gets very interesting, you know, and it's yet to be fully investigated.
Well, we've almost run out of time. We were sort of talking about your book, The Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships. And when's the second edition out?
Well, that book is still available in Kindle. It's out of print, so it costs a lot when you get it on the black market, whatever. But I believe we were hoping for the end of the fall, because right now we're finishing up the Italian version of The Dark Side of Cupid, which is the second edition, but it's never been in Italian, so we're doing it in Italian, and I'm just about finishing that up. So after that, then we're going to just do The Love Bite, and hopefully that will be much quicker. It's already additional material in there with respect to several other cases, some of my final thoughts and some alien-human hybrid interactions. So that will be out hopefully the end of the fall, or certainly by the winter, hopefully before that. So, but the old Kindle edition is still available, and certainly The Dark Side of Cupid in English is available in hard copy and digital, and it will be available in Italian pretty soon, I'd say within a month for sure, because much of my correspondence came with Dr. Corrado Malanga of Italy and his colleagues who spoke English. But his research within the alien abduction phenomena was very apt and very congruent with a lot of the things that I found out. So I believe that there's a large Italian sector who's very much in, you know, wants to know about this phenomena on these levels. And there was actually already another Italian man who published a book in Italian about like relationship manipulations called The Dark Cupid, but it's nothing like the version that I have, that it's the whole nine yards and more that is going to come out soon. So I just have to say that for any of the Italian, you know, speakers out there or viewers, that will be available soon. And just want to say that. So Amazon is probably the best vendor to find the books now. And hopefully other vendors will also have it once this gets launched more fully. Actually, I just started this a few months ago, and we're still finishing up our second editions. And then after that, what I would like to do is do my own testimony and whatever else comes to me that I believe is an important final, really some final words and testimony of my own that I'd like to finish up with. Because I'm getting old now, and I want to retire.
Yeah.
So,
do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's evelorgan.com. That's simple, evelorgan.com. And it used to have alienlovebite.com, but I dropped that domain name but I still have my original website. It's really just a WordPress site, and it's not the most advanced, and I know I need to work on it. But I do what I can through my Alien Love Bike Telegram channel, which is actually a private group, but I could send out the link to anybody who's interested. And I'm only on like Twitter and LinkedIn and Reddit. I think I created a group for Alien Love Bite, but it's really hard for me to do all the social media. I have to admit, it's better just to get my books and just go through Amazon or my website. You could ask a question and I'm happy to respond.
Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Okay, well, thank you. I enjoyed talking to you today.
That was an interview with Eve Logan about her book, The Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can get a 7-day free trial. And please check out my book. It's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, and it's on Amazon. You can get it on Kindle, audiobook, or paperback. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.